This is the Pressure Tested Podcast with Kelly Roberts.
So I think we have to change the paradigm of what we're telling our kids.
There is something to the networks. Men have mastered that, and women, I think, are still catching up to that.
We interview women who are changing the game in construction and beyond.
She thinks differently than all you guys. She's a female.
I could have sold the business, but I couldn't have. Right. There were too many people depending on me.
Today on the show, we interview Kelly Smith, CEO of All Tech Electric.
Decided to buy his partner out, join the family business, and I figured if I didn't try it, I would regret it.
From the golf course to the power grid, Kelly Smith brings the energy, and we're ready to put this Ohio State Buckeye to the test.
We're proud to be from Ohio, and it's always been Ohio against the world.
Thank you, Kelly, for joining our podcast today. I'm super excited to have you here. My very first question to you, and I think just about any female executive is going to ask you this question. How did you get good at golf?
Well, thank you for having me, and good question. And I don't know if I consider myself good at golf yet. I like to play it. It's a good escape from work, from life. And it's one of those things where I can actually focus on it. I'm competitive. I'm an achiever. And so it takes all my brain power when I play golf, and it's a great stress reliever, and it's fun. It can be fun. It can be frustrating too, but that's what makes me come back is those good shots and wanting to be better and better. And so, I'm still working on it, still taking lessons. It's one of those things that you can always be better at. You can always improve at. So, I just try to.
In your opinion, why should more women golf?
A lot of great business happens on the golf course, and it's an easy way to strengthen or build a relationship because you're with, you know, three people at least, if you're with a foursome or even a larger group, but probably that smaller group, for 4 to 5 hours. And so you talk about everything, right? Everything from business to personal to golf to anything and everything. And I just think it's a great uninterrupted way to get to know somebody. And it's fun too. A lot of business happens on the golf course and a lot of deals happen. And yep. So I think every woman should know how to golf, and just more opportunity, more options to connect with customers, vendors, coworkers,
and have fun. It's great.
And I think everybody should have a woman on their scramble team.
Yes. Because when Garrett, do you hear that?
I know. That's my goal. I said I want to be recruited for scramble.
Yes.
Because we get to go off the ladies' tees most of the time.
Yes.
And if you can hit your driver pretty far, you give the team quite an advantage.
Oh.
And so if there's one thing to focus on, if you want to have people recruit you, focus on your driver and how far you can hit it. And then...
Well, it's funny you say that because there's only like really, I mean, I don't know how to do any of it, but I'm to a point like in my golf game where I only know like two sets of clubs, like the driver and the putter. Like outside of that, like I'm going to hit everything with my driver.
That's all you need to know for scramble. Seriously, driver and putter. And you can just let the rest of the team hit the other clubs. Okay. So you're on the right track.
I think that's great advice. So you take lesson. When did you start?
Oh, gosh. I probably started... My girls are 11 and 13, and my 13-year-old probably started when she was 5, so I started about then. So, and then I got a little more serious. Now that I have some more time, that they're getting older, the last 5 years, I've taken more lessons and been able to get out and play more as they get older, and they're playing, and so it's a great family thing and enjoying the weather.
I've played sports my entire life. I can... play sports with all the guys here, pickleball, basketball, it doesn't matter. But golf, I'm terrible at tennis. I play all the sports, but golf I'm terrible at. And it almost hurts my feelings. I'm so bad at it because it feels like it's something I should just like be able to kind of pick up and go with. But golf is not one of those sports. It's something that takes real time and real effort and lessons. Like I'm going to start taking lessons but I want to get good at it because it's such a great way to spend a day. So good for business development. I can think of no better thing to do on a Friday than to go play golf. Like, that would be so fun. Like, I just bought my first set of golf clubs Yay. But yeah, I'm still kind of terrible.
Yeah.
I'm just going to deal with it. I'm just going to keep going.
You have to. I mean, when I started, I remember I'd play a hole. I'd lose three balls. I'd sit out for a hole. I'd go look for balls, play a hole, you know. And so gradually I got to the point where I could actually play nine holes without losing an absurd amount of balls. And so it's just, yeah, it's time and patience. And but my goal, I mean, I'm not able to do this right now because I'm too busy with the business, but my goal is to play once a week for business.
I mean,
at least. Because, yeah, it's great networking.
And you tell me where you live in McKinney. So you play, is it Stonebridge Country Club?
Yep, Stonebridge Ranch.
I love that area. It's such a good area.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell me about your career progression. So you went to Ohio State?
Correct.
Yes. So tell me, you went to Ohio State for an electrical degree?
Yes, electrical and computer engineering degree.
Okay.
Yes.
And, wow.
Graduated and worked in the electrical business for the power company
okay.
for several years as an engineer, and then I got more on the computer side and project management, and worked my way up and worked for some large corporations. And yes,
at one point you were working for Abercrombie as a business analyst. Tell me kind of about that change.
Yeah, so I switched companies. I was working for the power company because of the culture of the company. I had an electrical and computer engineering degree, and I went to an event and they said, what do you do? And I said, I'm electrical and computer engineer. And they said, why don't you work for us? And I said, no, I like what I do.
Yeah.
But I was young and they rode scooters and wore very fashion forward and
fun
clothes. And so I was drawn to the culture of the company. So got into computer engineering and worked in business intelligence and data, large IT projects. And
did you like
technical? Very technical. I loved it. Yeah, loved it. It's same thought process as electrical. It's very analytical.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's funny. So you, I don't, and this is such a broad generalization, I probably shouldn't even say it, but you kind of have like your bean counters, your analytical people, the people with their head down. And sometimes those skill sets like don't necessarily translate to what you're doing now. Like, how have you developed into a CEO kind of from those head down tasks?
Yeah, that was a change, and it was a little bit difficult because, especially as a woman in a male dominated industry, ever since college, I was always in a male kind of dominated setting, and so the way that I would prove myself was through my technical abilities and my knowledge and getting into the details. As I took over the family business and stepped into a more leadership role, and I had evolved into and done project management and leadership, and but always I leaned on my technical expertise. So as I switched industries, careers, and got into the CEO space, I had to learn that there's different ways to use my skills and my knowledge and my expertise, and I wasn't going to be able to be involved in all the details and prove myself like I had done in the past. And that took a little bit for me to figure out, kind of a new way to gain credibility and prove myself.
I definitely understand that. And I think that I really went through that with accounting, because I would consistently be at a table with a bunch of men. At that point, it was bankers instead of construction guys, but it was always this time period where I had to prove what I knew about the business and what I knew about the financials. And I was also kind of fighting the fact that I was really young at that time. You know, I was probably like 30, and so I was sitting at a table with people with gray hair, and me and Garrett, and Garrett gets an out because he's male and because it's his company. Like, he can kind of come up to the table and be whoever he wants, but I felt like I was constantly having to prove myself. But I feel very differently about that in this role. You know, like, it's so much, people don't necessarily, especially my employees, they don't necessarily care that I know how to install an air conditioner as much as I just care that I'm supporting them and I care about what they care about. So it's been a big change for me. It's something I'm still dealing with. So I totally understand that. Okay. Did you see on LinkedIn that you're in DCEO?
Yes.
How was that?
It was exciting. Yes. you know, being a second generation business, I think as a woman has brought some opportunities like that. And we work with a great marketing company, Bold Entity, and they've really kind of helped us rebrand and refresh as I've taken over the business from my father, but still maintain our culture and our look and our, you know, feel. And so that was exciting to be in DCEO and share a story alongside two other women that I know pretty well. So,
oh, cool. I didn't see who the other people were. I think I saw it on Instagram. Who were the other people?
Carmen with NTD Mechanical, and then Katie with Construction Cost Management. So they're all.
You told me about the NTD Mechanical.
Yeah, Carmen's great. Yes, you should have her.
Okay, I'm going to.
She's so fun.
I'll get that information from you after. Okay, so let's walk this back to your dad owning Alltech, or kind of starting Alltech. How did all that go?
So my dad's been in the electrical industry his whole life. He was an electrician right out of high school, started his own company at the age of 24.
Wow.
Yeah. So he...
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
He kind of jumped right in. And,
that's so cool.
Yeah. Has learned a lot of lessons along the way. And then he sold his company that I knew through high school, worked as the president for 10 years, and then started Alltech in 2003.
So sold to private... Another owner operator, or sold to private equity? What was his exit strategy?
He sold to kind of a partner company where they brought electrical services under their umbrella.
Okay,
for larger services.
That's nice.
So it worked out well. And then he was the president for 10 years, and then decided I can't work for anybody anymore. I want to start my own thing again.
So he stayed on after the sale.
He did.
Yeah. Okay.
10 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's got to be tough.
Yeah. I think entrepreneur at heart.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
Yes.
That's exactly right. It's hard to, if you have that spirit, just answer to anybody else telling you what to do, regardless of like your level of leadership. I think that you just butt heads. You just want to do it your way. Right.
I agree. Especially once you've experienced that once. Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree with that. I think that I can do it. I feel like I could work for anybody, but I think I'd have a hard time like taking a true step back and going and working for like a private equity owned air conditioning company, and that would like report truly to like a board. I think that'd be tough.
Yeah.
So he starts Alltech, and this is in where are you from?
Cleveland, Ohio.
Okay, so this is in Ohio still, right?
Yes.
Okay. So what happens then?
Yep. Started Alltech, and then the economy got rough around 2008. So he went down to Nashville and opened a Nashville office, maintaining the Cleveland office as well. And he was there for several years. And then I relocated to Texas in 2012. And so he followed, my mom and him followed me to Texas.
Okay.
One child, and we had another one on the way. So they wanted to be close to the grandchildren. And so he opened an office in Dallas.
While maintaining the other two offices.
Wow.
Okay.
Two offices. Yes. And then about a year after that, he had kind of a private financial partner. Not private, I should say silent financial partner, who wasn't really active in the business. And he decided he wanted to exit. So there was this opportunity that I did not anticipate or see coming for me to join the family business and buy his partner out. We were in the same city for the first time in... 10, 15 years.
Wow.
And so I was faced with this decision of, what do I want to do? So yes, I decided to buy his partner out and join the family business. And I figured if I didn't try it, I would regret it.
Yes.
I did not want to have any regrets, but it was a brand new start for me. I felt like I'd walked away from the career that I'd worked so hard to build, and it was one of the hardest decisions I ever had to make, but here I am 10 years later, almost 10 years later, 9 years, and I don't regret it. So
let's talk about the idea of, even though you knew you weren't necessarily taking a career step back, how it still felt like you were taking a career step back, kind of quitting what you've been building and going and working for your family, or owning a piece of a family business, really buying your way into it. But what were your... How did that feel? Like, how did you get past that?
Yeah, that was tough. I mean, it does certainly feel like you're taking a step back, because it was a new city. It was a new industry. It was a new job. But at the same time, I had a lot of experience from my prior career. And at that time, I didn't realize how relevant it was. And so it kind of took a peer group to bring that to light for me because, like we talked about earlier, I'd always relied on my technical expertise.
And right.
I didn't have that. I was not going to be able to ever catch up to my dad as far as installing electrical work.
Right.
I could have went into the field and learned all that, but I didn't have time, right? If you want to run a business, you can't,
right?
Can't get stuck in those details. And so that was really tough for me because I wanted to run the business like him. I knew he'd been successful, but I came with such a different background and different set of skill sets and experience. And so it took me, I don't know, probably a year, 2 years to kind of get to know the business and try to get my bearings on what I wanted to do in a peer group that really said, Kelly, you need to run the business like you would run the business. Like, don't try to be your dad just because he's been successful. Use what you know. Just be confident.
Yeah.
And so tell me about the peer group that's helping you kind of guide you through some of this. So just your friends, or is this like an actual network?
So it was EWF, Executive Women's Forum.
Okay.
And they had a woman business owners forum. We were all from all different industries, and we would take turns presenting on our business, and then you would get honest feedback.
I love that. Out.
Yes, it was great. Cool. Really, really valuable for me at that point. And still, that's how I met Carmen, actually. So, and
really? Okay. Cool.
Yes.
That's really cool. I'll look that up.
And Goldman Sachs is another avenue that also kind of helped give me some confidence. I don't know, have you heard of that? Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Businesses?
I've only heard about it because I saw it on your LinkedIn about 20 minutes ago.
Yeah.
So tell me about that organization.
So that is an effort by Goldman Sachs to fund education for small business owners. And so I kind of describe it as a fast track MBA for business owners while you're running the business.
Wow, that's great.
And so it was fantastic. I mean, you just build a network of people, you get all these skill sets and learn what you should be looking at, what you should be focusing on. And so I went through that program as well, which kind of gave me some confidence to utilize the skills that I already had or build on those and leverage those.
So you come into the business. Is your dad operating in this? Is he operating in the same city, working in the same building with you while you're getting started? Or is he kind of managing the Ohio business? How's the split look like for you guys?
So, yeah, we work together every day.
Okay.
Inside each other for five, 6 years. And it was great, to be honest. Like, I wish I would have the opportunity to work with him longer.
Really?
But, you know, he deserved retirement. He deserves retirement. He's worked very hard his whole life. So I'm glad that I was able to give him that exit strategy.
And great.
He's fully retired now. But yeah, we got along well. We were great partners.
So fully retired doesn't come in and tell you what to do every once in a while with the business?
No, you believe it or not, like, he's been very supportive.
That's great.
In what I want to do. Traction EOS was one of those crazy ideas that I had, right? I wanted to start something new. And
how'd you find out about that?
That was through Goldman Sachs 10,000.
Okay.
Yeah. So one of our facilitators at Goldman Sachs, Sandy Mitchell, is a certified implementer of EOS. And so she was doing a little demo of it. And I knew our team needed something. We were just in such a reactive mode that we were just constantly putting out fires. And you can't, I mean, you have to work on the business to grow, to get better, to improve. And we were just struggling, like constant firefighters. And so I knew we needed something. So I evaluated a bunch of things, and that was one of them. And so, yeah, we hired her to be a facilitator and implement it. And
based
off the book Traction by Gino Wickman. And my team was a little bit reluctant, even my dad. But once we got it rolling and really started following it and with a facilitator, we started to see the value pretty quickly.
So she comes in and you guys sit down and do kind of the vision planning all together as a team. So do you guys still do the weekly L10 meeting, the whole bit?
We do, yes.
Do you have it on a department level or do you have it within your executive team?
We have it on a department level now.
Okay.
We do not have it rolled down to every person yet.
Got it.
That's the goal.
Yeah.
And we've kind of taken it at our own pace.
Mm-hmm.
But we're starting to see how we can make that happen. And it's very exciting. We want everybody in the company to have a number, to have something that they own and be responsible for.
That's really good. I like that. Yeah, we've kind of went through the same thing with EOS. We didn't have an implementer. I had an implementer at a company called Crawford Services. So I'd been through the whole thing. And when I came over to utilities, we were just, you know, kind of the exact same that you guys were, just really disorganized, didn't really have a vision, didn't really have a plan for the vision. I think Garrett's always had a plan for the vision, but maybe that vision just wasn't put out there yet. And so I implemented it with our team, going through chapter by chapter of the book. And I will tell you, I think it completely changed our direction. It's something, though, that can fall off really quickly if you're not paying close attention to it. Like, you have to be consistent with it, or all of a sudden the rocks are just kind of something that you said you were going to do and the scorecard doesn't really matter. But if you're really running your business off of it, I think it can do amazing things. I mean, I saw the first company that I worked for, we went from just being a business that, so they'd bought three different businesses and kind of slapped them all together and said, okay, now let's see how big we can get this thing. And it was like one of those classic, let's start an HVAC company to get private equity to buy us out, which a lot of companies do. But they just weren't seeing any results. None of them had ran air conditioning businesses before. And so this guy came in and implemented this. And within about a year, they were showing profit for the first time. And it's pretty amazing what can happen with it when people do it. I will say that we've also had a really hard time getting it down to the department level. It seems to be something that's very easy for the executive level team to implement and believe in and go by. Kind of getting it down to that next level, it just doesn't always scale the way that I would like for it to. And maybe I'm not pushing hard enough, but we've had a lot of problems with that. I'm just getting it down to the department level. And, you know, we've been doing it, I don't know, this is probably 2020 that we implemented it. So I think it takes time.
It does. And I agree, getting it to the department level is tough.
It is.
We're still even struggling a little bit with that consistency and making sure that they're doing it on a consistent basis. And so it's
tough.
It's tough. But like you said, consistency is the key.
Yeah.
And really, once everybody can see the value and the buy-in, it's getting that buy-in and getting everybody to be on that same page. It really helps, especially as you're bringing new people on board and giving people a structure.
Yes.
And they understand what's happening, where you're going, what the priorities are.
Yep. That's exactly right. I think that if everybody can just see what's in front of them, you know, a lot of people just kind of come in and just do their job every day. But if they can come in and kind of understand where are we going and why are we going there, I think that people are a lot more successful. But, you know, it's hard to say, okay, my AP person, here's where we're going. And why are, you know, it's like she doesn't care. She's got 100 invoices to approve today, you know. She's just trying to get her job done. So I don't know. Sometimes it's hard to scale, but.
It is. I agree. And we have to be really diligent about it because it can turn into like a status meeting. I'm like, this isn't a status meeting. This is a strategic, what are we doing to chip away at our rocks and our goals? And
that is good. Yeah, I think that we go through that too. So we just implemented Traction in the heating and cooling company. And we definitely go through that. So we will kind of get to employee headlines. And that's when everybody's kind of brought these, you know, department style numbers in where they're like, okay, you know, change out did 200,000 this week and da 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 da. And then becomes kind of this like just discussion of like what the departments are doing. And, you know, before you know it, you know, 90 minutes are gone and you're like, okay, well, we didn't solve anything today. And I think the real power in those L10 meetings is getting to that like, identify the IDS part of the meeting. That's the hard part to get to. And then getting everybody to have the energy to really solve those issues, especially when they're like these really big, like an issue that we have had in utilities, it's literally been on the issues list for, you know, 4 years, is production tracking. We haven't really figured out how to track production, like how we accurately track hours of laid pipe. And it's like, it's such a big, crazy issue. It's like, it's just going to stay up there. Because it's like, number one, you're not going to solve it in one meeting. So how do you guys deal with that with your issues list? How do you go about solving your issues?
So something like that, we move to the long-term issues, which means we're not going to address it that quarter, right? But let's look at it next quarter and see, is this big enough where we want to try to solve it this quarter? And then something like that might even become a yearly goal where we're like, we're not going to solve that in a quarter. This is probably a goal for the year.
Mm.
And then it's breaking it down into those doable tasks. Like, what's the first step?
Yeah.
Tackling this, right?
Okay. That's great.
So just really breaking down those yearly goals and rocks into digestible tasks and
yeah.
chunks. And yes, because it can be.
That's great. That's great advice. I'd never heard that term. We're like deep in EOS right now, but I've never heard that term. You know, so many people are familiar with it that I think it's fine, but that's like a long-term issue, something that we won't solve this quarter. Like, I've never heard that because I think that that's so true, because there's issues that you know you can get to this quarter and there's issues you know you're not getting to this quarter. And I think having maybe a separate list is, there's some power to that. I've never heard that before. I like
it's
that.
It's great. It saves us a lot because we'll get sidetracked on issues. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, is that our priority? Is that part of our goals for the year? Is it part of our rocks? No. Okay. Move it to the long-term issues.
That's good.
And then look at it every quarter and priorities change, right? So it might move up the list, but that's been super helpful.
Okay. I like that.
And it helps people on the team feel heard because people come with great ideas all the time. And I'm like, I love that idea, but I don't have time to do it right now. But I would love to do it in the future. Let's put it on the long-term issues list. And
I think that this is something I say a lot, but I think that I've been in positions where I didn't feel like my ideas were supported, and I've been in positions where I did feel like my ideas were always heard and supported. Let's talk about like the effect it has on employees when they consistently come to a table and all of their ideas are just rejected. Like, how do you deal with rejecting an idea that an employee has?
Yeah, that's a tough question. I mean, I try not to reject it, right?
Mm.
I think we try to come to a compromise of what are we trying to solve, right? And is that the best way, or what are you really trying to solve? Are we open to other ideas? And let's try to solve the problem with a combination of ideas and input, and maybe we don't just pick their whole solution, but is there something that they're offering that we can incorporate into solving the problem?
That's really good. That's good to try to come to a compromise. Instead of saying, no, we don't like that idea, like, well, we appreciate the effort. We like what you're trying to say. Here's how we can compromise on it. That's good. So I think that, you know, a lot of people have ideas and you always want to support people's ideas, because I think that there's pretty much nothing harder for an employee to come to work and be like, I know how to solve this issue, or think that they, you know, because it's like maybe something they deal with every day. And then for their ideas to just fall on deaf ears. Like, it's so tough. It's really just, people lose motivation really fast like that. So that's good to kind of, you know, see the idea and try to figure out how to compromise with it.
Yeah. And I think I heard on one of your previous podcasts, you said sometimes you let them just run with it, right? And
yeah.
If it fails, it fails.
Yeah.
I think that's a good idea, right? I mean, you have to let people figure it out themselves. So I try to do that too. I mean, if I don't think it's the best idea, right? Like, let them run with it.
Yeah.
Hear it out. And
yeah, that's what I'm doing. It's funny you said that, because that's what I'm doing right now. We just hired a new service manager, and service is like the hardest part of what we do. Like going out to people's house. Like if you have an air conditioning issue, like us going out to your house and trying to solve your air conditioning issue, that's like the toughest department we have. It's just a lot of moving parts. It's just technicians are tough. But so I have this new manager, and that's what I'm really trying to do with him. Like, he's got a lot of big ideas and he's super smart, and he's been doing this for so much longer than I have. He has so much more knowledge about all of it. And I'm just really taking a step back and saying, you know what? This is what you think is a good idea. I'm not going to get in your way. I'm just going to, let's carry it out. Let's see what happens. You know, like what, so at the end of the day, you know, you can always go, you know, if something doesn't work, you can start over. You know?
And those are the biggest lessons learned.
Yeah.
The most valued sometimes is, I mean, I know for me, when we failed, that's the,
yes,
the thing you remember most and the thing you definitely won't do again. And the biggest takeaways and learnings are from failure.
Absolutely. But I'm just getting out of his way. I'm trying to really do that with a lot of people.
Because it's interesting kind of, because I mean, I don't, like, I did work for an air conditioning company a long time, but I don't have the same technical level that you did. I mean, like, I'm not a mechanical engineer, so I can't come in and tell these guys and talk to them about SEER ratings and manual J's. Like, I just don't, I don't have that. I have enough knowledge to get by, but I don't have that. So I really have to come in and kind of let the guys that do have that kind of get out of their way and just let them know I support them, which is different, you know?
Yeah.
I think that, I don't know, it's different for me because normally I'm like, nope, we're, you know, I want to do it like this. So I'm working on it.
It's good. I mean, I think I struggle with it too, right? It's the delegation too, and trust and delegation.
Trust.
And
then, yeah.
That's tough. Can be tough. Yes.
Okay. So I really want to hear about just kind of your war stories as being a female CEO. There are just not very many female construction CEOs. There's not very many female construction people, period. So what do you think, like, when you're looking back on your career, especially, you know, as being the CEO of Alltech, like, what are your war stories there?
Well, gosh, I mean, you probably have some too, but I've been fortunate. I mean, I work around some really great people, and I think my war stories are more of me getting in the way of myself, right? And not having confidence in certain situations because I'm in a male-dominated industry.
Yeah.
So I don't, you know, I don't have a ton of stories where I've been treated horribly.
Yeah.
Or differently. I mean, there's always situations, right, where they look to the male in the room and don't realize that I'm the CEO, right? And I'm used to that.
Yeah.
That still happens. There's this assumption that, you know, I'm not the leader, and my team's really great at redirecting and being like,
oh,
she's the decision maker, so you probably should talk to her, right? But yeah, I think for me it was just trying to, sometimes I felt like I had to fit in with the guys, and especially when it came to business development, because I didn't do a lot of business development and networking early in my career, so that was a whole new thing that I had to learn. And I'm not going to go fishing and hunting. And yes, I do golf.
You golf. You don't have to do those things. You golf.
This is shit. But, you know, building relationships just looks different for me. And I'm okay. You know, I've learned to be okay with that. I don't build relationships like the guys do, but people remember me, and I can form it. Kate does a really good job of that, like on your prior podcast. I've really enjoyed listening to that because she's awesome at it naturally.
Yeah, she is. She's just she's a connector and she's an includer. But I think you really hit the nail on the head when you said that kind of getting in your own way. It's funny, I was just at this business development meeting yesterday, and I didn't really know who we were meeting. But when we get there, number one, it's at the Cowboys Club. I had no idea what the Cowboys Club was until I walked in and realized I was like super underdressed. And, you know, I thought that we were just meeting, you know, just some purchasing managers for a home building company, and like sit down and it's like every, you know, major player in their company, and they're all in suits. And I'm just like, oh my gosh. And, you know, I kind of had two guys with me, of course, but I walk away from that and I'm like, you know, why am I, and I don't shake anybody's hand because it becomes this like awkward situation where I'm like, do I shake their hand? They want to shake the guy's hands first, you know, and it's like, and when I walk away from that, I'm like, it wasn't their fault they didn't shake my hand. It was my fault for not just shaking their hand. Like, I made that situation weird. They didn't, you know? And so I think that you're right. I think sometimes it's about kind of getting in your own way with your own confidence. And if you just approach those situations with confidence, they turns out they really don't care that I'm a girl. I don't think they care at all.
Right.
You know, I'm just another person there. I mean, they maybe think it's a little different, but that's about it. So I think that's more like in our own head.
I agree 100%. I always get my team laughs because I still am guilty of the sometimes shaking a hand or give a hug. I mean, even with women sometimes.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's that awkward, which way are we going to go?
Yeah.
Hands or give a hug.
Why is that so awkward? I'm glad I'm letting y'all
do a hybrid hand hug.
That's so funny.
But again, I think it comes down to the confidence thing. I mean, just own it, right?
Yeah.
Go one way or the other. You're going for the handshake or you're going for the hug.
Right. You know, and it's like, I think that I just saw the suits and the suits made me nervous.
Right.
And then I was just like, okay, I'm just skipping the whole thing. You know? But Can we just say the business development? I hate business development. That is the worst part of my job. Like, I'm a true introvert. So this idea of like going to a group of people that I don't know, I'll go through periods where I don't drink for a little bit. So especially going into those situations without a cocktail, like, I'm like, okay, yeah, who do I talk to? What do I do? You know, it's like, I have plenty of confidence in people I deal with every day, but how do you do that? When you, okay, let's say you have to walk into a room, don't know anybody there. How are you going to, what are you going to do?
I mean, there's still awkward moments for me too. Yes. I mean, I feel like it gets easier the more you do it, but I'm the same way. I'm an introvert, probably just
same.
Yeah. So it's, I've had to really step outside of my comfort zone. And I remember going to like GC night by myself and having to go
by yourself.
Yeah.
And that's a good one.
Each table. And now I look back, I'm like 8 years
wow.
ago, and it's gotten so much easier as you know more people and as you kind of get the confidence. But there's still those moments when you have to insert yourself into a conversation that is awkward and can be tough. And
but everybody there, who was it? Well, I was at the Texo breakfast panel about networking. I don't know if you went to that.
Those ladies were great about giving tips on how to do that. And one of the things is everybody in that room, or at least one other person, is probably feeling the same way you are.
Right.
And so
was Emily Ackerman on that panel?
Yes.
Yeah. She is cut. She's been on the podcast. She has a lot of, she can go talk to anybody. She
right.
does not care. And she immediately, you're best friends with her. There's not ever like a, yeah, we kind of know each other. No, like you instantly know who she is and you're best friends. And Kate's like that too.
Right.
Like,
I admire that.
I do too. Like, I'm just not, I will, like, and it's a skill. Like anything else, it takes practice. And I do try to practice it. But, man, I feel like it takes different amounts of energy for introverts to do it versus an ext. Me too. I'm like, okay. And I've even talked to my husband about this. I'm like, if we're going to do, and it's even with my friends, which makes me sound terrible, but it's like, okay, one night a week, we're going to go out. We're going to hang out with friends. We're going to get all of our socializing out. And then the next day, I need to be home, focused on, you know, not talking to anybody and like rebuilding my strength and my energy. Because especially as a leader, there's like something that Gary always talks about called decision fatigue. So you kind of spend your whole week making decisions and kind of trying to talk to people. And then you do one networking thing. And then you see your friends on the weekend. And by Sunday, you're like,
yeah,
it's all I've got. I have nothing else.
We were just talking about this with friends last night. I was like, I don't usually plan things on the weekend because I hate planning anything on the week because I have decision fatigue.
Yeah.
That I just, I'll go along if you invite me.
Yeah.
I'll go along.
Sweet.
But yeah, if you want me to plan a dinner with multiple people, it's not happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so funny. So I have like my best friend, Haley. She is, she's so good at planning stuff, but and she knows that I get this way. So, like, if there's ever anything we're going to do, like, we're going to New York this year. She knows that I'm going to do, I'll pay my way. I'll do all that. But, like, she knows that she's going to have to kind of plan the itinerary. She's going to have to plan when we get there, where we're staying. Because it's like, by the time I sit down to talk about something like that, I'm like, I don't care. Just, like, kind of show me where to show, like, tell me where to show up. And, like, I'm going to be there for you. Like, I will be there, but I do not know. Like, even Garrett's wife said that about me the other day. She's like, Kelly's all about, you know, showing up and having the fun, but she's not all about planning the fun. I'm like,
no, that's me too.
No, I don't want to do that Kelly thing. Yeah, I don't know. That's funny. Yeah, it's tough to do that. Okay, so tell me about, so you're in a skilled labor company. How are you guys recruiting and retaining talent in your organization?
Yeah, that's an ongoing battle in our industry. We've had a lot of success with offering referral bonuses.
Okay.
Trying to recruit that way because people that you know are always a good first avenue if you have that option. So referral bonuses have helped. And then culture of the company, right? We're just trying to really offer and highlight things that our competitors don't have. And really, I mean, you spend so much time at work and you like the people that you work around. So it really brings me happiness when I find out that the guys hang out outside of work.
That's
and
cool.
else, right?
I mean, good.
that goes to show that they're building friendships, right? They can come into work. They want to hang out outside of work.
That's great.
And so, yeah, what else are we doing? I think just really trying to invest in our people too, right? We have an increased focus to try to train within and promote from within and bridge kind of that field office gap that sometimes we have by bringing the field into the office more and getting them more involved in meeting, D10 meetings and month-end meetings. And
that's great.
Taking somebody from the field and training them to be an estimator, an assistant PM, and a PM. And
I think great
when they can see that and they can see the opportunity from within, that helps too.
Yeah, definitely.
What about y'all?
That's so funny that everybody has this like field versus office thing.
Regardless, you try not to, right?
Yes. Yeah. It's always that way.
Yeah.
Any company I've ever worked at, the first HVAC company, utilities, I mean, heating and cooling, I would say that we probably have, we use a lot of subs though for like our new construction stuff. So I would attribute it only to not having a huge field right now is probably the only reason we don't have it. But yeah, that's always a thing. I think that that's really amazing to get to promote somebody in the field though into an office position. I don't think all companies are willing to do that. And I think that managers in general, especially if you're really good at your job, they have a hard time. Like I can think of a technician I have right now who's so good at his job that unfortunately it wouldn't occur to me to think of him for that next level service manager role because he's so good at what he does.
Right.
I feel like it would be like a disservice to the company to take him out of this to move him here. It's like people have to get past that.
Right.
That's tough.
Right. It is. Yes. We've talked about the same thing for prefab, right? Taking our best foreman, superintendent, and moving them to prefab so that they're not just touching one job. Now they're touching multiple job, almost every job.
Yeah.
But that's tough.
Yeah. Because you have to backfill in with talented people and then they're always there to be like, oh, you know, I could do better than them. And I don't know, it's a lot. I feel like running a business is a little bit of a grind, actually. It turns out.
It's a lot more work then.
Yeah, especially it's funny to do this podcast episode on like a Friday afternoon too. Like on a, you know, Tuesday, like 2 o'clock, I'm still like, you know, I'm getting through it. But like Friday after two, like I'm like, okay, it's happy hour. Like what's next for us?
100% agree. Yes.
It's so funny.
Yeah. Burnout.
Oh.
Yes, towards the end.
Yeah.
For sure.
For sure. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I really enjoyed our conversation. I think I'm going to probably cycle back through a lot of people just to kind of get them back on. I'd love to have you back.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Thanks so much.
Appreciate you having me.